Five, four, three, two, one, zero. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Space Ambition is a very popular space blog on Substack with over 10,000 subscribers. Its founder, Alexander Viduk, is our guest this week. Alex is also a space tech investor at Alonic VC. We talk about both of her roles. Enjoy.
My name is Raphael Rotkin, and I'm an investor and advisor to space companies. Just as a reminder, this podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing should be taken as investment advice. This podcast is sponsored by NanoAvionics, a satellite manufacturer and mission integrator. Their technologies enable many space companies worldwide to offer services that improve life right here on Earth, such as providing global connectivity, conducting Earth observation, or contributing to scientific discoveries. Check them out, and also check out my episode with their CEO and co-founder. Sadly, I am not a rocket scientist, but I'm an alumnus of the International Space University. ISU offers a number of educational programs about space worldwide. Check them out at isunet.edu.
And just some final things before we start the episode about ourselves. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, such as Apple or Spotify. If you want us help expand our work, you can do so and support us at www.patreon.com/spacebusinesspodcast. And we'll also put that link in the episode notes. And lastly, you can follow us on Twitter at podcast_space.
Well, welcome back, space enthusiasts. Time for another episode of the Space Business Podcast. And my guest today is Alexandra Viduk. And among other things, she is the founder of Space Ambition. Welcome, Alexandra.
Hi, Raphael. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So why don't we start off as usual? Could you give us a quick introduction about what you're doing, especially since you're doing quite a few things?
Yes, thanks. So I have three main projects I run today. So I'm a founder of Space Ambition, which is like a Substack blog for investors and founders in the space industry. I also a venture partner at VC, deep tech VC called Alonic. It's early stage VC, so we do pre-seed, seed, series A, and checks up to $500,000, focusing on deep tech and space tech. And I also recently launched a venture builder, which is called Beyond Earth Technologies, which is a very early stages. We take projects pre-incorporation, and the focus is on technologies which can enable us living on Mars, kind of building economy beyond Earth, and so on. So yeah, that's me.
Excellent, and I like the building economy. Economy of Mars. Clearly, as my listeners know, my main job is having a venture fund called E2MC or Earth to Mars Capital. So I fully understand. So okay, let's dive a little bit deeper into at least a couple of those. So Space Ambition. And by the way, how did you pick that name?
just general, probably that was pre-ChatGPT, right? So now would be different. Yeah. We just looked for a good, name, which has some space, some ambition, and which has a free, which has available domain. I guess that's how we picked it.
Well, that definitely has space and ambition. So you check the boxes there. And by the way, I'm still not sure that ChatGPT made naming better or worse. But Space Ambition, great, that works, and you have the domain, so it's fantastic. But if I remember well, and you didn't talk about it specifically in your introduction, but I mean, you haven't been a space person all your life, correct?
No, it's actually quite recent. I started doing space maybe like less than 2 years ago. So before I was in finance and banking, I did several different roles with HSBC between London and Hong Kong, like commercial banking, venture strategy, operations, like lots of different things. And I think during COVID, I had like a bit of self-reflection on my career, generally on my purpose in this life. And I was like, the only thing which I'm doing and making my bonuses bigger, right? I'm not saving lives. I'm not doing I'm not fixing the energy crisis. I'm not kind of, pushing our borders of our civilization. So I took summer off and I thought about what do I want to do? And kind of deep tech and space tech came as a natural choice because it's not like when early 20s, you can choose a job and you can change it like in 2-3 years and I kind of jumped in something different. I think for when you're getting older, you kind of taking a bit more careful choices about your career. So, and I was like, okay, if I want to do something for next 10, 15 years, what it would it be? So, and space was kind of, I have a degree in physics. I always was interested in this. And like I always like sci-fi. I was always like dreaming about space when I was a kid. So I was like, why don't I try? So, and then Space Ambition came like as a first my project, because I was like, actually Space Ambition today is something which I was looking 2 years ago when I started reading about space on the internet. And I could not find any good, like, you know, simple plain English blog or like materials with no terminology, with like no pre-existing knowledge required. So that's why kind of what I'm writing today for me 2 years ago. That's how I would describe it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to say when you're looking for materials to learn about space, clearly you weren't looking hard enough, especially on the podcast side.
And your book, of course, I didn't know it before. So like, yes, that's kind of.
But okay, this the story, of course, and some of my listeners may know that's very familiar. I mean, I used to be a Wall Street guy. It actually sounds very familiar to mine, minus the part of the physics degree. Clearly, I'm not smart enough for that. But so I was going to ask you, you mentioned reading there. So when you were transition, or after you decided to make the transition to the space sector, so what are some of the things you did to kind of, you know, get knowledgeable about the sector, to get into the sector, like anything from, like you said, reading, but also networking and so forth? Because I know there's, you know, some potential listeners we have who are looking to make the same transition. And like you, you know, a few years ago, are wondering, well, how do I actually practically do this? Other than reading Space Ambition and listening to the Space Business Podcast, of course.
I think general advice people tell, if you like asking how do I change industry, how do I change career, people say like, you know, take benefit of your current skills, right? Like maximize it, use it. And for example, like if you're like in finance, let's say in like one industry, you can always look for finance job in a different industry, right? And then you can use your skills. I think for me, it was kind of changing both focus and industry. So I just kind of, you know, went to read everything, all the podcasts, all the, you know, videos, webinars, conferences online. There's a lot of conferences online. You can also like, it's most of them are for free. Networking, in physical networking, online networking, reading books, of course, and just randomly, you know, kind of messaging people on LinkedIn. Most of them reply, not everyone, but you still can do kind of quick virtual coffee chat and talk about what you want to do, ask them questions about the industry.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's dive a little bit deeper into Space Ambition. So can you just describe for like our listeners who may have not seen it yet, like what is Space Ambition? Like what does it actually look like? You know, what's the type of content?
So it's a Substack blog. Every Friday, we publish 5-10 minutes reading, like, you know, kind of a deep dive into some specific sector or a spotlight with a person from the industry or just general market overview. So this is not, we're not following trends. This is kind of evergreening content. Plain English, no terminology. Anyone, a person from the street should be able to read it and understand. So kind of spark ambition, spark curiosity, spark ideas. So, and obviously people reading it, and then like I get a lot of emails from my readers. So I understand what they're looking, what they're kind of trying to do. For example, people say like, oh, you know, I used to be a crypto investor. Now I want to invest in space. Where do I start? Or people saying, oh, actually, I'm a lawyer, but I want to do a space tech startup. Where do I start? So this type of questions kind of prompting us to do more research, more kind of post, more kind of things. Yeah, we have more than 11,000 subscribers today, quite a good open rate. So I think it's like 106 countries in the world, because I see the reports, right, on the back, back end. So yeah, that's probably what. And then kind of, you know, that's kind of started us kind of talking to other people and, you know, see like some different advisory projects, and like slowly led me to the VC and venture builder now.
So 11,000 subscribers, by the way, congratulations. That, I mean, seems really quite good, especially since it hasn't been such a long time. Was that just fairly linear growth, or was there some sort of like one or two breakthrough moments where you had like one edition where people read it much more than others and you had like a jump in subscribers?
I think this is the biggest Substack space tech blog as of today. So I think we are recommended by like all the space tech blogs on Substack. I think every time when I go to event or just do like think like this, like a podcast, I always have like kind of couple of hundreds followers after that. It's funny when, you know, the Indian mission landed on the moon, like overnight I had like several hundreds of Indian subscribers. you know, I guess like it's kind of, you know, this external events also causing people just go Google and say, I want to read about space. And I guess somehow they find space in vision.
And I was going to ask you how you pick your topics, but I think you started answering that. So is it mostly inbound? You look at what people are asking and then you kind of go away, or some sort of, you know, brainstorming you and your team do?
We do have a content plan for like 1 year ago. It's actually modeled by like we have a proper spreadsheet model. And what is the frequency? What do we think what kind of would be appropriate mix of different topics? It's mainly driven by my interest, I guess, plus inbound requests. That's probably, you know, it's kind of the best thing. If I'm interested in something, I'm passionate about it, I'm motivated to do research, I would be motivated to write something. And I guess people, like, we don't have many professionals from space industry reading our blog. It's more people who are new to the industry or who like investors or startup, like founders. So they don't need like specific, like deep dive. Like they just need something, you know, to read to get some ideas. That's and it's perfect for me.
And you mentioned some examples of the inbound things, like, you know, crypto investor. Is there any? So those are sort of, easily understandable questions that people send you. Was there any sort of particularly funny question or request that you remember that you received?
I think there is constantly a flow of interesting questions and suggestions. And I think can't remember anything specific. But...
No worries. And then the other thing you do is these spotlights, right, where you basically interview people on space ambition, and you know, and you've recently done it with me, and you know, hopefully that was useful to your readers. And so with the spotlight, similar question, how do you pick the people that you interview?
I think we try to do it maybe like once a month. So by the way, thanks for doing that, that was great. We did have some feedback about, you know, people, your background is quite interesting for space industry. I think lots of founders, they don't know what's happening inside investors' minds, for example, right? And they make some assumptions. They may be scared. Maybe they have some bias. So I think one of the reasons, you know, I speak to founders a lot and sometimes they see this bias. So that's why I wanted to do a bit more spotlight on investors and kind of show their views, what they think about. And that's kind of one, like, this article is always the most popular in our blog. So like always have the, like, the best views, the best results.
The spotlights are the most popular, or specifically the investor?
The investor spotlights. Yeah.
Okay. Understood. Do you have a good view of your sort of, you mentioned 106 countries. Do you have, what kind of detail of view do you have on your reader community? So geographic, obviously, is there some other interesting statistics that you have about your readership?
So lots of people use, it's a US dominated, of course, that's the biggest, I mean, in mm-hmm. terms of the geographical statistics. Most of the people are using their personal Gmail address to subscribe. But what we've done analysis, like, you know, if you go and download all the email addresses and you kind of look at some kind of patterns in the email, if it's a professional email, I think according to our estimation, I think it was like around 4,000 people who have some kind of VC or capital or ventures in their, so I guess that means like 30% of our readers are actually investors. So, and I obviously see lots of emails as well coming. I also see they're coming from VC people. So, and this is great. I think it's great that, you know, VC people around the world reading about space. I think this is probably one of my mission in life. So I'm very happy to see that.
So from those various spotlight interviews, by the way, how many of those have you done right now? Mm-hmm. Not just investors, just anybody.
I think around maybe 10, 15, not many.
Okay. But so any particularly interesting, you know, insights that you found interesting from talking to all of these people?
I think it's fascinating that people have very different backgrounds, right? I don't think I've ever seen an investor who has something similar to other investor, right? It's like a background or like work history or something. It's good to see people coming from all the different, you know, ex-NASA engineers, entrepreneurs, bankers, you know, like people from like other VCs, right? It's great to see that we have diversity here. But also kind of it's probably still kind of, you know, the barrier for entrance is quite high. It's perceived to be difficult. It's perceived to be like kind of, oh, it's for billionaires, or you have to be a rocket scientist to understand that kind of. And I think this is now changing. I think people slowly, slowly moving the mindset into the right thing, that it's like, it's not like this, but slowly. Yeah, I think it's a kind of good trend now.
So you mentioned diversity somewhere there in the middle. I got to pick up on that. How about the gender diversity? Did you find it easy to find, you know, for example, female people to spotlight?
That's horrible. I always try to pick up like female, but actually I don't think I had many to date. Most of the GPs are male, right? And that's, I mean, I'm not surprised by this situation. It was like during all my life, I mean, I studied physics, I worked in banking, right? I was always a minority. But I think it's even worse now in space tech, because especially in investment area. And, you know, I was a founder at some point, right? I had my own fintech startup in the UK. And I spoke to like, maybe like 500 VCs during my fundraising. And I think maybe less than 10 of them were female. And actually some of them also, my co-founder was male and he was a bit older. So some people, some of the like, you know, top tier one Silicon Valley GPs actually thought that I'm his PA, just joined the call, you know, not like a co-founder.
Right.
So this is kind of still shocking, surprising. And I think the worst part of this is because, you know, I think this is a psychological thing, right? So when you invest in someone, or when you hire someone, or when you give someone a chance, you always try to look subconsciously for a younger version of yourself or someone who looks like you, right? Because it causes you comfort, it causes you like, you know, give you some confidence and everything, or just, you know, just nice body to have a chat with, right? And that's a problem, because obviously if you have lots of male GPs, that they would choose male founders. And that's kind of, you know, reinforcing the bias, reinforcing the lack of diversity.
Do you have any thoughts on how, I mean, this is all true. I mean, VC can, you know, I've done banking and VC now, and but sticking with space, I mean, I think I've ran the statistics maybe 3 years ago, I think, for a UN event, and I looked at all of the, I did like some machine learning analysis of all of the C-level executives at startups, and it was like, I think, over 85% male. Do you have any thoughts on how we can improve that?
I don't think it's an easy question, and I think that's like, well, if it was easy, we will change it already by that time, right? So I think things like, you know, in banking, for example, like when I used to work, there is like lots of initiatives which I think actually helped. Like, for example, you know, kind of gender statistics about pay in banking, right? So that's, I think that was a great initiative in the UK. Or kind of, you know, like how many percentage of female people you should have on the board of directors. Right. That was, I think, also eye-opening for many people, just to kind of look at your own board of directors, right? But it's not exactly what you want to see, right? Lots of like training and, you know, especially kind of, you know, self-awareness about your own kind of thoughts, right? And so on. But I don't know, like, I don't have like a big picture, kind of a structure, how we should do it. But I always, I mean, personally, every time I try to support people who have different background. And I think it's kind of, it's an effort, of course, always, because you always need to kind of catch your own, you know, like thought and say, okay, yeah, now I need to change it. But it's difficult.
Yeah, agreed. It's gonna take some time, of course. Especially for like, you know, technical roles where we have to start early on at the schools and get more girls
and
women in there.
I think the schools are not a problem, right? Because I recently read some statistics that STEM subjects in schools at universities actually much better if you perform by females. But when it comes to the career choice, it doesn't translate into these roles. So I think it's a phenomenon we can't explain. I think there's some such a lot of kind of social studies required to do that. But I think it's also lack of role models. And maybe lack of encouragement, maybe, I don't know, like it's very complex.
I think you're right about the role models, and I think they actually exist, but they don't get highlighted, or should I say spotlighted, enough. So it's great that you as a woman are doing what you're doing, and it'll be great if you have, you know, if you have more women on like your spotlight interviews as well. I mean, speaking of which, is there any particular woman, or actually maybe broaden this, is there any particular spotlight guest you really would like to have in the future, sort of like a dream guest, and why?
Good question. I never thought about that. Elon Musk. No, just kidding. No, I think you're right. I would like to see more diversity. I would like to see people from, you know, like kind of, you know, female, or people from kind of different countries, which is not, you know, common. Like most of the people are like from the US or Europe, right? Would love to see, I guess, different perspectives as well. So
How do you sort of the people to spotlight? I mean, so you mentioned this before. So okay, you had some specific effort to get more investors on there, but more broadly speaking, is that like a similar sort of like you had a content plan? Is this a similar sort of plan of what kind of people to invite, or how do you generally pick those people, or is it opportunistic?
It is opportunistic. I think we just started getting requests for spotlights from people, which is great, I think, but obviously it's a selection issue, right? So in order to keep the standard level, it's not just inbound, it has to be some kind of idea. Obviously, I do have a list of all space tech investors in the industry. So we've done some analysis, actually. One of our recent posts was quite detailed about that. Like, so we know probably whom we should interview next. We do have these ideas. But I think this is still kind of to keep balance, right, between, you know, the top people, the top players in the industry versus some diversity and some different perspectives.
Any interesting insights from that list of all the space tech investors you have?
I think the kind of the main problem which we are facing is lack of like late stage space tech investors, right?
Agreed.
I think this is commonly recognized. Lots of early stage, lots of small funds, like up to 20 million, right? But lots of small checks. But then when it comes to the bigger, like, you know, late stage pension funds, some institutional investors, then kind of people are still a bit, I think people are still kind of asking questions about how it can be a 500 million company with no revenue, right? This is kind of not standard. So lots of education required, lots of general recognition of the subject.
Mm. This is a nice segue into investing. So let's talk about that in a minute. But since you just mentioned education, let me ask you one last question sort of about Space Ambition and everything. So besides Space Ambition, which you are writing these days, is there any other, you know, other blogs that you are reading in the space sector, or news sites or podcasts?
Of course. I love your book and love your podcast. I think it's, I probably signed up for all the major, like, you know, VC startups, space tech newsletters. I try to at least skim them every day, I guess, as everyone in the industry should do anyway. But I think I like to read about subjects. It's kind of my interest driven. So, for example, if I see a startup which I really like and I want to deep go, like, you know, read about a specific technology, that's kind of, then it doesn't have to be a specific outlet, or I just kind of go kind of do some proper research. And I like this more because I think it's kind of giving me like more focus, more ideas. I think that's, but I also like to see normal, like kind of mass market outlets writing about space. And I think example of like Social Capital recent, you know, analysis, or like, you know, and New York Times or Forbes or like Wall Street Journal writing about some space subjects, I always think it's great. And I think we should do more of this.
Yeah, I agree. Or CNBC. And I agree with you. I think that's important because it's bringing space to a community that's outside of the current community, right? Like more generalist investors.
Yeah, but it's like every time I go to see some people, you know, like outside of my work, right? Like just in a bar, right? Like, and people are coming, oh, what do you do? I said, oh, I work in space industry. And they always say, do you build rockets?
Yes.
So this is the only, this is basically like general public idea about working in space. Just
yeah, and that's probably the question where then the next question is sort of like, so are there aliens? Do you
believe that? Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about investing and space investing. And I guess you said your generalist deep tech investor. But let's start with space. So how did you get into specifically the space investing part? And was that sort of before or after space ambition, and what made you interested in investing in space, right? Because it's not necessarily like a necessary consequence, right? Like people who are passionate about space, but they're like, it's probably not a great place to invest, but you seem to think it is. And why is that?
Yeah, I think it was a natural choice for me as well. So when I started writing Space Ambition, I started getting like a lot of incoming pipeline of projects and just generally networking with people in the industry. Because my previous job before the space, I was a founder, right? So I kind of liked the idea of being, I think I like mindset of investors or founders. I think the energy, the ambition, the mindset is kind of what I like. So I was like, okay, that's kind of space plus entrepreneurship. But that was the right overlap for me. I think our kind of idea about space investment is that it's a growing industry. It's a lot of changes happening, lots of, like things what SpaceX is doing, Starship and everything. I think this is definitely like the steps which are going to change the industry a lot. We do think that space is the next big thing. People say, what is the next, B2B SaaS? And we do think space can be one of the industries which will replace B2B SaaS, right? There's no second Google coming. There is no second Amazon coming, right? So I think, one of the questions which people always ask is, okay, what is the next 1,000 unicorns? Which areas do you think they will be? And I do personally think that half of them would be in space tech, maybe another half, another deep tech areas, but let's see. But yeah, that's, I think that's kind of our outlook.
Since you're covering space tech and other deep tech areas, is there, and I guess for our listeners, other deep tech areas could be things like, anything from ranging biotech, advanced materials, advanced computing, quantum computing, so forth. Do you see any interesting peculiarities that are really special to space versus compared to other deep tech areas?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. People say that space tech is one of the most difficult areas of deep tech. I think what I see interesting in space tech is there's a lot of, how to say this, romantic ideas about space. Lots of people invest in space because they had like this childhood passion about sci-fi, right? And space also considered to be like, oh, this is like our next frontier, right? So it's not like people, for example, in energy invest in energy because they like movies about energy, right? But people do invest in space because they like movies about space, right? I don't think this is like the main driver in most of the professional space tech investors, but this is still, of course, exists, and we need to recognize that. And I think also like I see people use it a lot because I see the pitches and I can see like this is definitely like tailored for these people who like sci-fi.
A really interesting point you're making, and I actually have to, from my experience, agree with that. I'm pretty sure actually that even we have investors in our funds and our portfolio companies who are investing. Yes, they want to make money, but it's like you say, it's like a passion, right? It started for many of them with sci-fi, childhood, watching rocket launches and so forth. And I think you're right. That makes it very different from some other industries. Like, it's not like, somebody's going to invest in an insurance company because I'm really passionate about insurance. And it's, when I was a child, I dreamt about insurance. Okay. I just lost all of my insurance listeners, but anyway, so I think this is an interesting point. So within the space sector, is there any, like right now, is there any sort of like, areas that, or business models that you're particularly excited about?
I think we're quite lucky that we can be opportunistic and we can look at many different areas. We don't have like a very strict rules in our VC. But what I personally look at and what I personally like attracted to the projects, right, is I love in space manufacturing. I think this is definitely mm-hmm. a big area. I also like to see real products, right? Not like a building of infrastructure. I think infrastructure is boring. However, I think it's like definitely now a good way to make money as well if you mm-hmm. want to do it. Especially companies which have lots of contracts with like military defense and government mm-hmm. and body. But I think recently we've been looking into projects such as semiconductors in space, for example, manufacturing or production of some proteins, pharma, drugs, kind of all of these things. So I think this is kind of a really good example of projects which benefit Earth, benefit other industries, but also using space technology. And this is now also enabled by cheaper launches, by infrastructure we are building in space.
Have you written any space ambition about this sort of in space manufacturing yet? Because if not, that's you should.
We do have two posts. One about biolabs, which actually if you Google biolabs in space, that the first mm-hmm. page is space ambition article. And we also kind of published a very high level post about electronics manufacturing in space and benefits of deep vacuum, extreme temperatures, like all of this. So, but again, it's like, it's very high level, it's just to kind of give people interest about, kind of spark the interest that this is happening, guys, and you should take advantage of that. But I mean, we would like to do more, we would like to do deeper. And this is changing very fast, by the way, as well. So that's why we try to be quite generic in our statements. Because you don't want to keep updating all the posts all the time.
Yes. Right? Oh, I'm very familiar with this problem. Since you mentioned my book, I don't know how many times I've updated that already. So I have to make it more generic as well. But among the sort of investment opportunities to receive, let me ask the other way around. I mean, is there stuff that, maybe specific business models that you would like to receive and that you're not seeing at all, not seeing enough of, and you're wondering like, oh, why aren't there any founding teams like doing this, or at least sending it to you?
I think I would like to see more like B2C models, right? Like everything is now is B2B, right? Like,
or B2G, arguably.
B2G, yeah, correct. But B2B, right? So it's like I would like to see an example of what if people can, let's say, what if I can get control of one of the satellites for 5 minutes? What I can do with that? What can be like a proper retail service about that? Something like this. I also would like to see more like proper ideas about space mining. I think everything what we see now is like very like sci-fi style. Haven't actually seen a proper way, but I see a lot, but sometimes it seems to me like this is just pure sci-fi. Would like to see kind of more ideas about that. Yeah, I guess this is the kind of the main areas I would like to see more.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a similar question about the investor side, since obviously you know a lot of other investors and you've done this study of space tech investors. I mean, on the investor side, do you think that space investors are currently, focusing on the right area, or that they're maybe over focused on the wrong thing or under focused on something else?
I think obviously different investors focusing on different areas. Yeah, there's like no like one big trend which I can see. Everyone like, there's a lot of space and defense, a lot of like space and deep tech, and like lots of deep tech investors now you can actually see on their website there's also space. So kind of everyone wants to be there, even if they haven't done any space tech deals yet. For example, I can't see it in the data, but they have it on websites, right? So I think this kind of idea about that. And you can clearly see investors who are only focusing on space and Earth applications, for example, dual use, not like dual in terms of military, but dual in terms of earth applications. And I can clearly see some investors who only do like crazy stuff, right? Especially in the US, there's a lot of people like this, like very, very sci-fi. I think launch is definitely a bit like, I can see like there's like a lot of projects, right? And I think this is kind of this idea of each space entrepreneur, maybe not each, but majority of them, maybe because of our childhood, maybe because of Elon Musk, everyone wants to build a rocket, right? At some point, even if you see their roadmap, they say, okay, maybe we will like start with this slowly, slowly we'll build our own vehicle, our own rocket. And obviously, it's only applicable for startups which are doing some infrastructure. But it's like, I think this is like probably a bit, it's driven by emotions. It's not driven by logic, business logic. So I think that's kind of, I hope many more people would see that.
I think that's really interesting because it goes back to what we were like talking about 5 to 10 minutes ago, right? Like that space is different with this passion element. And I think that's almost like it's almost like a quote unquote dark side of it, right? Because it comes back to bite you in the ass. Like you say, I think there is a lot of people, especially from the technical side out there, who decided to build rockets because it's cool and it's their childhood dream, but you know, may not understand the market demand picture, maybe.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I you know, most of the like biggest space tech investors such as Seraphim, Techstars, like they don't invest in launch anymore. And sometimes they see the founders, they say, we pivot, we go to Techstars, and then we pivot back to launch. It's like an idea, it's like people know about that, but it doesn't change their passion, right? It's kind of, they're happy to pivot just to go there, get it, and then pivot back. So I think this is a romantic, like, you know, passion about space, about sci-fi.
Yeah, understood. Okay, since we're like sort of winding down time-wise here, let's get to some of our sort of typical closing questions. And one is about the ecosystem. So you are currently, I think, mostly based in Singapore. Do you just want to spend you know, 1 or 2 minutes talking about what you see in the Singapore space ecosystem, how you see it?
I think it's obviously very small. It's like generally Singapore is small. There's not much land, right? But I it's great to see it's developing. There is some focus. There is definitely good movements. So there is no space agency in Singapore, but there is Space Office, which is now turning into the space agency. And they recently had a change of leadership. So Jonathan Hung moved as a director of it's called Austin. So that's, and they do have some grants. They give some, I think, like the most recent public news was that they had like 50 million grants for space startups. I think there's like around 20 startups present in Singapore in space tech area, different areas as well. So we see like three accelerators here. So SSTL is more like the nonprofit government kind of style. Seraphim last year opened here a branch, like one of their cohorts, and obviously Starburst also here. We recently had one of the records as well in Singapore. So one of the startup raised 100 million seed round, which I don't think I've seen. It's Cosmosus. I don't think I've seen numbers like this anywhere in the world for a seed round.
Not for a seed round. That's pretty aggressive.
Exactly. So, and I think generally people, like lots of companies, choose Singapore as a, like, you know, Asian headquarters, Southeast Asia kind of representative office or something like this. So I would say kind of this is and obviously lots of fundraising going on because now Singapore is the capital of, you know, fundraising in Asia as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So you mentioned the incubators, but how about investors? Do you see like more space tech investors emerging in Singapore?
I think the deep tech generally is not like very popular in Asia yet as much as in Europe and States. But I think slowly, I can see like changes here. We do have cases and family offices invest in deep tech, in space tech. I guess lots of funds now considering deep tech as a like a space tech as a like potential vertical, which is good to see as well. But still, it's not obviously the volumes are not the same as Europe and States.
Yeah, and so let's come to our traditional closing question, which is about, you may know, is about science fiction and whether you like science fiction and whether you're one of those passionate people that you know, like has dreamt about space since childhood, like science fiction. And then if you do like science fiction, you know, what are some of your favorites? And it could be books, movies, TV series, games.
I think from the recent one, I watched both like Netflix and Chinese version of Free Body Problem. That's a great kind of you know, it's popularization, right? I think because the book is quite difficult, right, to read. So I think that's both of them were great. For different audience, of course. The Expanse as well, especially the first seasons, the first couple of seasons, great. I like The Foundation recently as well. For like, I mean, about show, because I think show is easier to watch for busy people, right? Yeah. Not everyone will just go and read, you know, Foundation, right? But, you know, having Netflix series while having dinner, I think it's easier and it's more kind of accessible. So I think this is kind of probably the from the recent which I liked. Yeah.
Terrific. Maybe it should be a Space Ambition just for recommended science fiction for people who want to get into the space sector.
I actually had it for Christmas last year because most of the people, you know, I think that's the time when you catch up on Netflix, right? And reading like, so I kind of thought I'm not going to write anything about space. I'm just going to write like the top sci-fi movies for people to watch during Christmas holiday. Yeah, I'll send you a link.
That's terrific. Yeah, no, I would like to look that up. Alexandra, thank you so much for taking the time today. Thank you what you're doing for the space sector. I think it's really important and probably helps to drag in additional people, which we direly need in the space sector. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for another nominal episode of the Space Business Podcast. If you like this podcast, please consider giving it a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, such as iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at podcast_space. Also consider supporting us at www.patreon.com/spacebusinesspodcast. If the podcast got you interested in learning more about the business opportunities in the space economy, check out my new online course on space entrepreneurship on udemy.com. The link is in the episode description. Lastly, if you have any feedback, including ideas for guests, and that may include yourself if you have an exciting space story to tell or interested in being a sponsor, drop us an email at spacebusinesspodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to seeing you for the next episode.